Hi, this is Greg Schultz from Storage.io, and I'm here in San Jose at the LSI AIS. That's the Advancing Innovation Summit. And visiting with me here is Jim Handy of Objective Analysis. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Greg. Just fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You know, Jim, part of the topic here is advancing innovation. I mean, we were just chatting a little bit ago about the fact that there is no such thing as a data or an information recession.
Yeah, it certainly is skyrocketing, and that was something that LSI was talking about in some of their presentations of how the budget's not going up anywhere near as much as the bandwidth requirements or the storage requirements.
And, you know, one of the interesting pieces tied into the, you know, the conversation is, you know, there's all, you know, you just mentioned it, you know, there's the bandwidth. People really focus in around bandwidth, but the key theme I kept hearing repeatedly is around latency and how latency doesn't lie.
Yeah. Latency is a huge issue. But, you know, the bandwidth, too, that one of the speakers was talking about how in New York City you can't really get video streaming as well because you're competing against so many other people for the antenna bandwidth.
Well, you know, that's a good point. And, you know, part of, for those who don't know about LSI, is the fact that, yeah, they do make chips, they do make silicon for going into storage systems, adapters, and other things like that, as well as RAID, solid state. But they're also in the cell phone market, whether it's the digital signal processors, the things that help support movement of data, as well as the processing of data.
Yeah, and LSI actually has done an awful lot in the past a few years, to take advantage of flash memory and the increasing role that it's taking in storage. So, probably the most notable thing that they did there was the acquisition of SandForce, which is a leading SSD controller manufacturer. And with that, they're really trying to spearhead an effort to get higher speeds and higher latencies in the storage system from top to bottom.
Jim, was that a Freudian slip? Did you say higher latencies, or did you mean lower latencies?
Ooh. I meant higher speeds.
You know, Jim, we better take a step back here for a moment and just set the stage. You know, as I mentioned, yeah, you are Jim Handy of Objective Analysis, but let's tell the listeners what your role is in all the solid state type technology.
Well, thanks, Greg. I actually am a Silicon Valley resident, guy who moved here for the chip industry in the 70s. And have been in chips my whole life. And as SSDs came to be, then I started becoming an SSD analyst, watching over the chips inside and kind of looking from the inside out from the SSD. And so it throws a different perspective on than I think yourself, because you come at it from a storage standpoint, and how does this change from the way storage has always been? To me, storage is something new. SSDs are, you know, something that is a very fast way to get in there. And they suddenly popped on the scene a few years ago and have really made a big change.
Well, you know, there's an interesting piece to that, Jim, which is there are people that think solid state in the form of NAND solid state is new, yet it's celebrating its 25th anniversary.
Yes, NAND flash is celebrating its 25th anniversary. What we're really brought SSDs into computing architecture is the fact that the price per gigabyte of SSDs dropped below that of DRAM in 2004. And before, it used to be that NAND flash was more expensive and slower than DRAM. So from a computing architecture standpoint, it wasn't interesting at all. But once NAND flash became cheaper and slower than DRAM, then it kind of fit in between hard drives, which are also cheaper and slower than DRAM. And so now what you've got is you've got NAND cheaper and slower than DRAM, and hard drives cheaper and slower than NAND. And so there's just kind of a natural order of things that make NAND a good fit.
So would I be dating myself if I told you I was the launch customer for DEC Solid State, where as a launch customer I got a special discount of $100,000 for 128 megabyte of DRAM solid state?
That's a long time ago, I'm sure. But you know, Texas Memory Systems started that in 1986, and before that, there was actually a disk replica in the 1970s made by a company called DataCore that was just a core memory-based solid-state drive. So the idea has been around for a long time. Now the question is, the DRAM SSDs and the core-based SSDs were more expensive per megabyte, per gigabyte than DRAM. And so the only people who wanted those were people who had maxed out the DRAM in their system, and they still needed to have a lot more fast storage, and they were willing to pay an arm and a leg to get it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if you go back even on the, you mentioned Texas Memory now, an IBM company, but you have the long list of where are they now, Solid Data, Imperial, there was a whole bunch of them, even Deck, who had their business, and then they sold it off via maybe right after, even before Compaq, they sold their solid state business off to Quantum, who divested it.
Yeah, okay. I don't even remember that one.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, Solid Data, I know, that actually got acquired by OCZ and is now working with the Indilinx acquisition. So, you know, Indilinx is an SSD, a NAND flash SSD controller manufacturer. Solid Data made DRAM SSDs, and they brought an awful lot of know-how into the equation.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see what OCZ does with that.
You know, that's similar to what TMS or Texas Memory is, that they were in the DRAM business, and then they started levering NAND. Literally,
yeah,
before it became popular and trendy.
Yeah.
And they actually had appliances combining the two many, many years ago.
Yeah, and Texas Memory Systems actually, you know, once again, this is a company that has an awful lot of know-how. And so because of that, they were able to get NAND to perform a whole lot faster than pretty much anybody.
And, you know, that's part of the trick here is that as we look around, you know, we're here at this LSI event, is anybody, I think you are the one who came up with this great quote, I love it, is anybody with a soldering iron can ship an SSD product, but the trick is, what do you wrap around it with the flash translation layer, FTL, and all the drivers and everything else?
Yeah, and there really is a lot to that. There's a newsletter that's called Storage Search that it's the guy keeps track of how many
Zolt.
SSDs. Yeah,
Zolt.
Zolt.
Oh, it's a great site.
Yeah, yeah. And he has a list of, I think, about 300 SSD manufacturers. And I think that probably a good 250 of those companies are companies who do nothing more than put parts together and into a box.
Yeah, that's
according
a good point.
To a recipe given to them by the chip makers.
Yeah, you know, Zolt, you know, his site, Storage Search, is a great one out there. And that it didn't just pop up when the current SSD wave became trendy. It's been out there for years and years. Great resource. Jim, let's shift gears here a little bit. Is, you know, a moment ago, you know, you talked about how you came from the chip side. I actually come from the server side, from server, then down into the storage and all that aspect.
Yeah, so it's looking down for you and looking up for me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know, also from the applications. But one of the funny things I run into is that storage people think, well, this is all a storage topic. Some server people think it's a server topic or it's a chip topic. And I say, you know what, it's all converged, in that the barrier are the people who are stuck in their thought processes of, is storage memory, is memory storage?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, you know the discussions, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, as a chip guy, I mean, that's DRAM, that's NAND flash, emerging PCM, things like that. Isn't it all just part of a different hierarchy that has different touch points?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It is a hierarchy. And that's kind of what I was saying when I was talking about NAND being cheaper and slower than DRAM, but more expensive and faster than hard drive.
You know, there's an interesting notion right now. We were chatting about this earlier today, Jim, is that somebody put out the numbers, maybe it was Seagate themselves or WD, or somebody reported and comment about how drive shipments are down year over year.
Yeah.
Of course, the cloud crew is jumping up and down saying, see, everybody is moving to the cloud, but wouldn't of those drives have gone to the cloud?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. The storage's got to be somewhere if you're going to store stuff.
Or the SSD folks, they're jumping up and down saying, see, this proves everybody is moving from hard drives to solid state. You're tracking the solid state. Did you see a jump in solid state activity?
No, not really. It has grown, and if you count the stuff that's going into ultrabooks as auxiliary SSDs to a hard drive that's already going to be in the ultrabook, then it has grown a little bit faster than it has been, but not that much.
So, I mean, it goes back that, again, maybe it's the case that the dedupers and the compressors and the thin provisioners, that maybe people are just optimizing their storage more efficiently.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. You know, I think it comes back to...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's really tying into that either.
Or the fact, I think what it really has is that, yeah, there is no data recession, but there are economic issues, and people are just using all the above, a little, some solid state, some cloud, compression, using all these different techniques.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's something that I saw Kingston Technology do a couple of years ago, and I think a lot of people are doing now, is they're extending the life of their PCs. What was interesting about Kingston's thing is that they went to hundreds of CIOs across the United States and gave them free SSDs and said, you can change all the PCs in your organization to SSDs, even though they're 3 years old, people are going to be a whole lot happier. And you can save all the money you'd do with a normal PC refresh cycle. if you just, you know, instead of refreshing the PCs, you plug in an SSD that's the same size as the HDD in that three-year-old computer. And what's interesting about that is a three-year-old computer has a very small hard disk drive, and so because of that, the SSD that replaces it, if it's the same size as what you're replacing, it ends up being a pretty cheap SSD, like a $100 SSD. So you save your $500 per PC on the refresh by implementing $100 per SSD on the new devices. It ends up being a great way to save money, and you end up not buying the PC, which the PC people then don't buy hard drives, and then the hard drive shipments go down.
You know, and again, you know, Kingston's, they've been around for a long time, DRAM, memory DIMM chips for PCs. I mean, this is nothing new for them coming out with a program on how to extend the life of that asset.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it were up to Kingston just how long they'd have you hold on to things, 12 years, 20? It could be a long time.
But I mean, you know, so that's at the desktop, but there are signs of this elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean that, you know, too. You were mentioning it in the server, and, you know, that's a very prime example of that. You know, something that you and I didn't talk about before was that Intel just recently announced a SATA drive for use in the data center, and they have introduced a 1.8-inch form factor, and the reason why is because about 5 years ago, the guys who were making Blade servers ended up putting 1.8-inch drives in. They don't do that anymore, and so Intel is actually rolling out a product that they'll roll out early next year that is aimed just at upgrades to five-year-old servers.
Oh, interesting. So it's a 1.8-inch drive, so it's smaller than the 2.5s.
Yeah.
And are those low profiles?
I believe that they're just a standard 7-millimeter thickness.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So if I were to put one of those in the docking trays, in theory, I could drop one of those into a laptop.
Yeah, you could do that too. You know, if the laptop's got a 1.8-inch or hard drive in it.
But. Right, but if the laptop had the 2.5-inch drive bay, as long as the SATA connector or the SAS connector were common, might be getting ahead of ourselves here a little bit.
Yeah, well, you'd have to do something to the mechanical mounting to make sure that the thing didn't flop around inside.
Right, right, and that's where you have the little mounting cages where they mount to. My guess is that somebody over at Intel right now is probably pulling their hair out saying, wait a minute, we didn't design it for that.
Yeah, they particularly call it a data center. Or disk.
Yeah.
So, and it's a little bit more expensive as a result, higher performance, that
great,
kind of stuff.
Great. So what else are you seeing new and interesting out there? I mean, you know, certainly we got all the NAND, single level, multi-level, EMLC, been hearing the TLMC, you know, all these different variations.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are we at with PCM, phase change memory?
It's a long way out. A friend of mine used to talk about some of these technologies as being the technology of the future and destined to stay that way. And what's really amazing to me is just how far the NAND flash guys have been able to make the process go. Everybody knows that NAND flash is going to hit some scaling limit, it's called, where it just can't be shrunk anymore. And the consequence of that is that the price is not going to go down anymore. And that's going to be a tough thing because semiconductors just live off that whole principle of prices continually going down. When that happens, then we are going to flip over to some other technology. But in 2003, Intel very publicly at their Intel Developer Forum said that flash was going to run out of steam at 60 nanometers, 6-0.
Okay.
And we went tearing through that down to 55 nanometers, then 45 nanometers, and then 25 nanometers, and then 20 nanometers, and Toshiba's now shipping 19 nanometers. And Toshiba says that they've got at least another two process generations in the 10s, and maybe some stuff below that. So, you know, we've already gone almost 10 years since Intel made that announcement. And it wouldn't be at all surprising to see us go another 10, just because people keep innovating and coming out with these just absolutely genius kinds of ways around problems that we can't see past right now.
So it's safe to say that there's PCM, it's the future, part of a future, as in memory resistors and all the other fun things to talk about, but there's what people can actually buy and deploy right now. NAND has a lot of life left in it.
Yeah, it does have a lot of life left in it. And, you know, these technologies are being worked on, but there's so much time between now and when NAND ends up getting replaced by one of these technologies. And it'll only happen because the technology gets cheaper than NAND. And it's a chicken and egg thing there, because if the volume doesn't go up, the price isn't going to go down. Anyway, you know, there's so much time that some dark horse candidate could pop up from out of nowhere and end up becoming the thing that takes over. But I have to share with you something that I like to quip about this.
Okay.
That is that NAND flash is really ornery to use. You can't write to it without erasing it first. You write in pages, you erase in blocks of 4,096 pages. And so, you know, there's an awful lot of juggling and stuff. There's wear out that you have to worry about and all that. PCM and all these alternative memories don't have any of that. Now, what that means is that when users end up converting from NAND flash to PCM or whatever, ReRAM, Ferroelectric, Ovonic, something, the change for them is going to be invisible. I like to say that they're going to go from their 1 terabyte iPhone to a 2 terabyte iPhone and not really notice that there's been any difference in the technology, even though there's been a massive shift. The people who are going to notice are the people who put together SSD controllers, like LSI with their SandForce controllers, because these guys have a phenomenal expertise in getting NAND flash to behave when it doesn't want to. Well, since all these other technologies behave very nicely, then all of a sudden, all the expertise in learning how to make NAND flash behave, that's going to be obsolete. And so you're going to see a whole bunch of very clever people out on the street when that happens.
Oh, interesting. So if they're clever, if they're sharp, they're already thinking about how they're going to adapt, adjust, and do something different in the future.
Oh, maybe so. You know, it could be that some of their expertise will be usable in stuff like communications and that.
Maybe.
Too.
Very well point.
Yeah.
Speaking of time, Jim, I really appreciate your time, taking some time out of a busy day, busy schedule here. Again, visiting with Jim Handy of Objective Analysis. What's your website?
Oh, it's www.objective-analysis.com, and I'd like to also put in a little plug for a couple of blogs that I do.
Please do.
Because I've got one called thessdguy.com, where I talk about SSDs, naturally from the perspective of a chip guy, and so I look at the guts more than anything else.
Sure.
And then I've got one that's called thememoryguy.com, and the memory guy is just about stuff like phase change memory, NAND flash, and other memory chips, too.
Great. No, I'm glad you mentioned that, and again, great resources for you folks out there, whether you're coming from the storage, the server, the hardware, the software, whatever it is. I mean, this is all converging. They're all interrelated. So again, thank you very much, Jim, for visiting.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
And again, this is Greg Schultz from Storage.io. Okay, enough said.